general needs to speak truth to power. So this, I see this as a, you know, it's a once-in-a-lifetime crisis, but it's also a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. Out of every major catastrophe, we have to make an opportunity of it. And for me, that opportunity would be to provide an emboldened and strengthened, well-funded, politically backed World Health Organization, so in future pandemics and for future health crises, we have the WHO we so richly need, which is a powerful one that will stand up to big governments and stand for science, health, and equity. And that's what the WHO was there for, and that's why
we have five
it was
seconds.
The first United Nations agency.
I want to thank you so much, Professor Lawrence Gostin, founding O'Neill Chair in Global Health Law at Georgetown University, director of the World Health Organization Center on National and Global Health Law, also global editor for JAMA, the Journal of the American Medical Association. That does it for our show. I'm Amy Goodman with Nermeen Sheikh for another edition of Democracy Now! Stay safe.
The time is 7:59. You're listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 on your FM dial. Coming up next, KBOO Talk Radio with Linda Austin Osterlund.
Don't you know we're talking about a revolution sounds whisper. Don't you know we're talking about a revolution sounds they're standing in the welfare lines, crying at the doorsteps of those armies of salvation, wasting time in the unemployment lines, sitting around waiting for a promotion. Don't you know, talking about a revolution sounds whisper. Who are people gonna rise up?
Good morning.
Get their share.
Good morning, and thank you for tuning in to KBOO Community Radio this morning. I'm Linda Olson Osterlund, your host today for Thursday morning talk radio here at KBOO. I'm glad to have you all out there on this beautiful sunny day starting out here in Portland. Our topic today that I want to talk to you about is it's a combined topic, but not really combined. I want to talk to you about Stephen Miller. I was recently given the spring issue of the Southern Poverty Law Center's newsletter, and the Southern Poverty Law News Center did an expose in their paper called Hate Watch about Stephen Miller after they came about 900 emails that he had exchanged with a Breitbart, the well-known alt-right media organization that carried very extreme racist themes and were his from 2015 and 2016, part of the time when he was just running up to becoming part of the Trump campaign. He fed over 900 email suggestions of very racist stuff that she should cover and the angle that she should cover them at Breitbart. He was basically feeding her every day what to say, or as frequently as every day or every week, what to say on that. And Southern Poverty Law Center rightfully said, you know, we said he was a racist, we said he was a white supremacist, now we have the actual proof. And so I thought it'd be good to talk about this man, the architect of the immigration policy under Trump. He very much has his hand in all issues immigration, including the most latest executive order, I guess is what we want to call it, that the president has issued that says that they stopped all immigration into the United States for 60 days. Of course, they backed away from that quickly and made it only green card requests, not guest worker programs, because it's agricultural time, and agriculture doesn't want you to kick out guest workers, and they don't want you to kick out workers who are coming to pick fruit in our fields. So here's the intersection where I wanted to bring it. Here is the head racist, and a lot of it he does on immigration, but it's on all issues. He very much, you can tell from his emails and his outlook, very much believes that the quote, white race, what he thinks of as the white race, is superior to all other races and very much disparaging of African-American, Hispanic, and Asian races as well. And it makes it very clear. And he's the architect of that. And he is the senior advisor to President Trump. And it may seem strange, but I think he's probably the only one that's been there from the very beginning. He stepped up and was a senior advisor from the very beginning and still is. And so it's been his hand in the latest issues that have been going on in immigration, including putting a new person in charge down at the border, a person who he hopes will begin to separate children again and will do things that he wants a little bit more harshly. He's a pretty evil guy, but the intersection comes with COVID, comes that we've been able to see with COVID-19 the racial disparities in this country much more highlighted. So that's part of the topic that I want us to talk about as well today. So I want to invite you, the listener out there, the audience, to be the conversation today, to be talking about these issues, and I can bring you plenty more facts about it. But I want to hear from you about these issues, because I think in one way, this is a positive of COVID-19, not that more Black people are dying, for sure, not that more Hispanic people in the meat industries are dying. No, that's not what's good about it. What's good, we can see it plainly written. We can see it in the number of deaths in Chicago and in New York and in New Orleans and in St. Louis. We can see these high percentages of African-American people dying from COVID at much higher rates than they live in the society. So I think that it, what I like about it is it says to those who want to deny racism, no, here we are, right here in your face, it exists, because we're all basically biologically the same. And it is true that different ethnicities may have different propensities to different kinds of things. Like I remember in China, high blood pressure was a big deal. It's true that we have differences that way, but there aren't differences that mean that we would die from this disease. The differences are in the overall underlying racist conditions that lead to poverty, to less good health care, to less good food, less access to good food, et cetera, and also directly to the care that they're given at the hands of the majority population. Racism exists in all forms, in all ways, and often inside ourselves, like myself, in places and in ways that we don't know. And those kinds of attitudes come out when people interact with each other. Hospitals, doctors, clinics, et cetera, count. Schools count. We see in this city, in all the ways that you could measure comparisons of the majority population with, quote, minority populations, is that there's disparities, that there's disproportionate in discipline at school, in failures at school, in suspensions at school, in getting arrested, in getting picked up, in getting stopped, in getting put in jail, in what houses you can get, in housing discrimination, in what doctors who will accept you as a patient. All of that has been documented and goes on in this city as well. So yay for COVID-19 making us face it. I want us to have to face it and talk about what we're going to do about it. So that's the conversation today. I invite you all to call. It's 503-231-8187. COVID-19 has shown us a lot of things about our society, and I think it's important to talk about all the different kinds of things they said. So call in, you know, let us know what you're thinking about this, but particularly address this issue and address this issue of Stephen Miller, because Stephen Miller has been with Trump from the beginning. He said recently with this latest 60-day ban that it would probably go on longer, and has been heard on phones indicating he intends that to go on longer. The actual number of immigrants who have come to our country has dropped pretty dramatically, at least 7% of the kind of immigrations that come with family members. And he has bragged about breaking the chain migration of family members coming here to live with family members who have successfully immigrated to the U.S. He sees that as a real problem, and he talks openly about not wanting foreigners to come. So give me a call. It's 503-231-8187. 8187. You may have noticed that we started out with the song A Revolution from Tracy Chapman, and I like that song in particular because Tracy Chapman talks about real people. She says, it's going to come like a whisper from the welfare lines. Well, it's going to come like a scream from the welfare lines now. Full disclosure, my mother was a welfare administrator. She started out as a caseworker here in Portland and then went on to be the welfare woman in different counties until she was working regional and state level. So I've grown up my whole life around, quote, the welfare state. And one of the things I know is that the fraud in that area is so low, it's ridiculous. Outside fraud investigations over and over found it less than 3%. And they found that the majority of people, like the majority of people in this country, were designated as Caucasian or white. And they were a woman who was single and had 1.5 children, if you're doing it statistically. So we, you know, we have a whole lot of myths and lies in this society about how people get into poverty, who they are because they're poor. The conversation we have about people on the street will tell you that all the time, people coming in from the suburbs and saying how disgusted they are by those filthy people on the street, not how sorry they are that there aren't showers and housing and bathrooms for people to use. So we have a way of othering people in this country, and othering them around race is much more common than we'd like to think. I can tell you a little bit more about Stephen Miller, but please, let's get that phone ringing. I need to hear from you guys. 503-231-8187. Tell us what you thought when you first heard about COVID-19 hitting Black people so much more heavily. I have the statistics here somewhere. Let's see, St. Louis, 64% of the people dying there are from COVID are Black. They're only 45% of the population. In Chicago, 64% of those dying from COVID are Black, but they make up only 30% of the population as a whole. 70% in Louisiana of those dying from COVID are Black, 32% only of the overall population. So those are just a few of the cities. I did look it up. The CDC has a map. It appears that only 40 states are reporting consistently confirmed cases that they're reporting racial disparities or racial identity on COVID cases. And it's very important that we know the racial identity as it's designated in this country of people who are dying so that we can address it, so we can say what's happened, where are we falling through, and what are we doing. I think as many of us know, the underlying poverty aspects are a bad diet will lead to a bad diet and no chance to have healthy, good exercise will lead to, you know, all sorts of issues from overweightness to diabetes to high blood pressure. I know diabetes and high blood pressure are two large concerns in the Black community in this area. I know that there were programs started up in hairdressing salons and in barbershops to let people know about blood pressure and to teach people to have their blood pressure taken. Outreach measures like that are really important because in general, poor people don't go to doctors as much. And at least from some of my African American friends who are older like I am, their history of care is horrifying. I have a friend who died a few years ago who had an ectopic pregnancy, which is a pregnancy that's not inside the womb, therefore can't go forward and is extremely painful. She went to the county hospital where she lived, and I believe this was in Boston at the time, and she was tied down and restrained because she was thrashing about in pain, and then she was gagged because they didn't want to hear her speak. They didn't want to hear her cries of pain. So that's how she experienced an ectopic pregnancy. That kept her from going to any doctor or any hospital for probably over 30 years, literally over 30 years. And so when we wonder if there's a reason why people of color don't seek medical help as much, it's because many, it's certainly of my generation, of the older generations, and I think as we're seeing from COVID-19 going forward, have had bad experiences or don't feel that they're recognized or treated properly. I know when that same friend of mine would go to Texas, to Houston, where they have a larger Black community. She could actually get good dermatological care for her skin, a kind of rash it was having, and then recognized it immediately here. None of her doctors were Black and did not know how to address that particular issue for her.
Well, Linda, we do have a caller in if you'd like to take calls.
Sure, I'd love to. Fantastic. Who is it? Good morning.
Hello, my name is Edie.
Hi, Edie. How are you today?
I am so grateful to you and to KBOO, and I want to remind everybody to make sure that you give your donation, your investment in society, our safety, our community, by giving money to KBOO, and they'll tell you how. The reason I'm calling is to answer your question. I don't think there's anything inherently in a COVID virus that would know who's Black or brown, or that there's anything in someone that's indigenous, Black, brown, or person of color that would be less resilient to or more inviting to disease. But I think what it is it's systemic racism and classism that we live in areas that we can afford and that society allows us. And when you are put into places that are full of poisons right now near Zenith oil terminal, there's incredible diseases caused by all the air pollution. So a little bit of even diesel particulate in the air can damage your lungs and increase your susceptibility to COVID-19 by many times. There's more air pollution. There's more water pollution.
Edie, isn't that Zenith area, Northwest Industrial, which has been a really bad area for the families that live in that area anyway? They have much higher levels of asthma, I believe.
And now as we're having increased oil trains to service that, and they're going through Sellwood and North Portland, Vancouver, we're having Southeast Portland, we're having more areas being polluted, and you're going to have increases in asthma and upper respiratory diseases. I think another problem is there's bad piping, bad water. It's not just in Flint. I think the other thing is that there's bad housing. It's not just asbestos and lead, not just in Northeast Portland. I think it's a problem in that there's the kind of jobs that are allowed to indigenous Black, brown people of color that are more dangerous, that are not given safety. The people who are filling gas tanks don't have masks or gloves. The people who are more apt
all
to
the
be
time, just
closer.
Because the gas makes me sick, so I always feel sorry for gas attendants.
Well, I hand out gloves and machine washable face masks sometimes when I see them. The people who are most apt to be close to folks to get the air droplets from cough or bodily fluids are those who are least valued. There may be immigrants, Black, brown, indigenous people of color. And so the majority of folks who work in nursing homes and do home care are those very people who are not allowed. Need to call the Oregon Home Care Commission and the Bureau of Labor, saying that we need
hey,
to
Edie,
make sure that there's protection.
Let me share some facts with the people. You stay on the line with me, and I'll share some facts about what you're talking about. You know, when we were seeing all these meat plants go down, I had known that meat processing was one of the most dangerous, and slaughterhouses for sure were one of the most dangerous places for people to work in the United States. But in the last many years, it's become they've become majority non-white who work there. So I've got some statistics here today. It says that immigrant laborers joining the meatpacking workforce in the 1980s, and their numbers continue to grow. In the 1980s, about 10% of the meatpacking workforce was Hispanic, but by 2003, that figure rose to 41.5%. About 4.1% were Asian, and 12.7% are Black. That's in the meatpacking industry. And so when we see these meatpacking places closing down, we should know we're also seeing that racial disparity at work. I wanted to add that in, Edie, just because you were giving us, you know, you're making a good point, and there's a specific about how that ends up happening.
Also, the mass of the captive animal feeding and the mass slaughter, that's where more people are injured from diseases, from animals, from the equipment, from the knives. Sometimes when you eat a hamburger, you're actually eating cut up human beings. So there's also the diseases that come from all the antibiotics for gaining weight and forcing animals in very dangerous positions that are very, very sick. I think I know that the Willamette River, they've never found a safe, healthy fish to eat in the last 30 years, and they've never found a safe, healthy animal in these captive things that are disease-free. It's the industry that polices or doesn't police itself and prevents.
And the average USDA. Pay for meat packers is somewhere between $10.92 an hour and $13.52 an hour at the highest.
And so the people who are the custodians who have to clean up the stuff are most apt to fall to their death or have very serious injuries. In addition to that, you're breathing all this disease and your body has all these antibiotics, so you're breeding all these super bugs when you're in these animal things. And the other thing is that when you are an indigenous person living on the lands that you've been forced to live on, that is where there's a lot of mining, fracking, at Four Corners. There is I forgot the name of it.
Uranium.
And the dust of that. And then there's Peabody coal, the coal dust. And then going drilling underneath Chicago to Four Corners, these big wealthy folks think they're going to have their little estate under the ground. And that digging makes all this dust and damage and then polluting all the water. In addition to that, when you're in military bases, all that, as they don't sell it depleted uranium, it's actually radioactive dust that is in everything you have, and all these really bad tests, not just at Tuskegee and with prisoners, but with military. So you increase all these health risks, all these attacks on the immune system, and you're going to have damaged lungs, and you're going to have a damaged ability to do it. It's not because you're black, brown, or indigenous, or a person of color. It's because of what society does to you. And on top of that, our immune systems don't work very well when we're under chronic stress. We've got generational trauma that changes our DNA, and it changes our body's sense that we are in danger and how we react to that. So let us make it safe for all these dear little white people from pandemic by making it fair and safe for all these people who are currently dehoused or unhoused, and instead provide them safe housing, provide safe food, safe work environments so our farm workers, our ranch workers are either in organic, safe, democratically run, worker-run co-ops, or we're having a completely different approach. We're not doing monoculture. We're not doing meat and dairy. Let us make it safe for the lowest, the most vulnerable in the rung, so it's safe for those on the top, because it's a farce to believe that your white skin is going to protect you from a pandemic. The police might not police you.
I think we should let it go right there. I really appreciate what you're saying, Edie, and I think you're making really good points. And I'm going to let you go, but I'm going to ask other people to also chime in with what they think we can do about this situation.
Distribute sewn face masks for everyone.
That's a very good idea, starting right there. Thank you so much. Yes. Well, and see, houseless people as well is another category where you find it. And I'm so glad that Edie did bring up indigenous populations, and I know that we've been covering that on KBOO through Democracy Now! And also with Paul Rowland on Wednesday morning. Jacqueline Keeler is often on, and he often covers the issues there. But there is a similar kind of disparity happening for similar reasons if you want to talk about underlying racism, but with different specifics. And I understand the Navajo reservation right now has been the hardest hit, the Navajo Nation, I should say, not the reservation as such, but the whole nation has been hit. So thanks to Edie for laying out a lot of the ways that she sees that, you know, racism operates in the society and how it actually is having, you know, COVID-19 is allowing us to see that. She's giving out masks. One of the things I want to get back and keep tying in the Stephen Miller thing here is because racism didn't get invented with Stephen Miller, and white nationalism didn't get invented with Stephen Miller or with Trump, but it's been carried forward to a much higher programmatic level in terms of how it's being carried out and expanded in terms of actual policies of our government. And I think we see that, and Stephen Miller is important. I hate to say that, but individuals are important. So even wrong individuals and bad individuals leave their impact on, he's leaving an outsized impact on our communities and on our public. And I think that one of the opportunities of seeing this is seeing how people do have to work. We're now seeing inside the slaughterhouses and in the meatpacking places, and they try to show you the best assembly line pictures of them on NPR, where you do see, you know, everybody now masked up and stuff. But you can tell even then, it's going to take a major change in how food is processed to be able to make processing safe for when there's disease transmission. But, you know, there's disease transmission any given time. Flu comes around once a year and it gets tens of thousands of all of us in the United States. So I'd like to hear more of you call in and talk about now racism and then racism and what we're going to do in the future. I think one thing that we might want to, you know, I know there are people, there's a petition out right now that 50 organizations have signed. It's a petition to the president. I'll give you the phone number to call in again. It's 503-231-8187. But let me
read
you.
We do have a caller on the line.
Okay, great. Who is that?
It's Wade.
Hi. Good morning.
Hey, how are you doing? I'm well. I'm vegetarian. I'm really happy about that. I changed. I went about 5 years ago again, and I'm not worried about this. I wanted to point out a book, The Jungle by Upton Sinclair, I think his name is, and not the Jungle Book. No, this is about the meatpacking industry in the 1900s or previous. And but one thing I wanted to mention is The Jungle. It's called
Upton Sinclair, right? Yeah, I remember it. I read it in high school, I believe.
I just got it a couple of years ago. But what I wanted to point out was not only that there's much of the grossness of that industry and the abuse of the people and what have you, but the social change that happened when people came to America. These people came from, like, Latvia, I think it was, and they were having a wedding party, and the way it worked in the old country was they would provide the beer and the food and the, and people would leave money, right? And it was always a little extra. That would be like, you know, a gift for the couple. But then in America, they rented this holiday, and people were like leaving little pittances, if anything at all. And just as soon as they come back, now they would never have dreamed of doing that back in the old country, right? Because then they'd be what? Shunned, humiliated. But here in Chicago, you can get away with it, I guess. So there's that. I wanted to point out, also, I kind of, I've come across old books, and I found one on the Russo-Japanese War, and the only reason I mention it is that these guys were so starved, these soldiers from Japan, is the point of view it was being written from, that they had almost zero meat, I'm pretty sure, and very little rice. And the doctor said, commented that abdominal wounds often healed, and certainly much better than before, and that's usually a deadly wound, because you got almost nothing in your gut, and certainly no rotting meat or, you know, decomposing meat.
Well, that's interesting. So you're talking about...
Yeah, you see the point.
I'm sorry. Yeah, you're saying that if we stopped eating bad meat, we'd be doing a lot better anyway.
Correct. And here's another thing. People often talk here in the news about the flu you get every year. I don't get that. I almost never get anything like that. Maybe once every 5 years I get something resembling a cold, and I drink orange juice, and, you know, there it goes. So,
Well, I'm glad you don't get the flu, and I hope you never do, because the one time I had it as an adult, I thought I could possibly die. I really got quite ill.
Yeah,
so I did a flu shot, but, you know, they're not always effective.
No, I've had them before, but I don't do it. I don't get them anymore. But, okay. Well, thanks for letting me share. Hey,
well,
wait,
thank
I got
you
a really
for calling
idea.
In. I really...
I got this really excellent idea. You guys need money, okay? You remember Pioneer Square?
Yes.
Buy a table brick, people. These bricks are only about an inch or inch and a quarter thick, and you just pave your inside lobby. And I don't
know, and get people to pay for our bricks. Oh, my God. I kind of like that idea. Thank you.
I think it, and I would also suggest, because there's people that had put a lot of energy in that are not longer with us or able to buy a brick, so I would just do the inside lobby as a dedication to all the folks that came before us.
Well, that's a very cool idea. Thank you.
Yeah, there you go.
All right. Well, thank you very much for calling in today. I appreciate it.
Peace.
All right. I was just about, before we got him, unless we have another caller on the line right now.
No, we are good, but I got to say, okay, as a vegetarian myself, I'm definitely happy that that life choice of mine.
They just don't eat the meat, and then we won't have to worry about packing it.
I guess, and also, you know, the animals won't have to die.
Well, there is that. I know. I did last night after watching some scenes from a pig place, and I just, yeah, it can get to you. I understand vegetarianism. I'm not a vegetarianism. I understand it, though, and I may end up getting there. Just before that, though, I want to give the phone number, 503-231-8187. The Southern Poverty Law Center, they are the ones that exposed those 900 emails that Stephen Miller, the senior advisor to the president, the current President Trump, and really the immigration czar, if you want to put him that way. He's the architect of the immigration policy, and he firmly believes in keeping foreigners out of this country, quote foreigners, I'm using his word, on emails, foreigners out of this country as much as possible, and who is more than willing to separate children at the border to do that, and has in fact begun to try to delay children getting back to families again. It had gotten the number of children in detention with ICE had gotten reduced to 3,000 and had been up to over 15,000. Stephen Miller is currently proposing another policy that would once again delay that and keep those children in ICE control. The ICE shelters are the worst because they're not shelters and they're not run by people who do shelters for children. Resettlement organization has real shelters, some of which have been exposed to be quite bad, but some of which are much better, and the children are usually there only 2 months on the way towards their sponsorship. But so Stephen Miller, he's also the architect of the current shutdown of all immigration into the U.S. except guest worker or specialty visas that can get you in. So the Southern Poverty Law Center has put out a petition. It's been signed by other 50 organizations, and what it says is that the emails contain proof in the form of links to white supremacist websites, recommendations for racist novels beloved by white nationalists, and suggestions for how to frame anti-immigrant stories of what we've already known. Stephen Miller clearly believes people of color are a danger to our country and should not be allowed in. He's been the architect of your administration's anti-Muslim, anti-immigrant policies, which have traumatized families, endangered lives, and done nothing to keep Americans safe or make Americans, quote, great. Remove Stephen Miller from his position as senior policy advisor. That's a petition to the president, because really he's the only one who can remove him. I don't think they believe that this will get Trump to remove him. I think the only thing that gets Trump to remove people is when he thinks they've insulted them or him or failed to support him enough. And Stephen Miller is never that. He seems to be, in some articles, it seems he's even valued over Jared Kushner by President Trump. So I want to ask this question. Here we have this truly evil man. If we were 40 years out, like we are out of Nazi Germany, we would have had the Nuremberg trials. We would have learned of all the evil deeds of people like Stephen Miller, and have tried them and, you know, put them in prison for those of deeds that are illegal or led to deaths of people under the care of their government. So here we have the Stephen Miller, we have the Trump regime, but we've had racism all throughout our whole history from the very beginning when we came and started stealing this land from the indigenous people, the land all of this belongs to, who were here before any of us. So, and then we've carried that racism forward through all the different, you know, permutations of it, to different races, you know, exclusion acts, immigration acts to hold out certain people, slavery, of course, and then Jim Crow when slavery was over, and then mass incarceration, and the manifestations of racism we see throughout society today. So it's all, it's been here this long, and we've needed to fight it this long. And here's Stephen Miller with Trump, and we come to November and the election. So November, this election, everybody's going to be asked to vote, or if they hold the election, they're going to be asked to vote for Biden or Trump. I think that most people who really hate Trump's politics will probably vote for Biden, despite wanting to do that. But say they don't hold the election, there already is whiffs of that. They canceled one of the primaries. Say that we're having an upsurge of COVID in October or December, or say we're not, but they use an excuse like that or to stop the election, or say the election goes forward and they stop it in the same way that they did why can't I think of his name right now, the vice president who did not win and it got Bush in, and they went to the Supreme Court in 2000. Right now on the Supreme Court, Kavanaugh is one of the people that was in Florida protesting against the results there, the hanging chads, if you remember, and then the decision somehow got to go to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court put Bush in control. So when it comes to this fall, and it comes to either voting for one side or another, does Stephen Miller make any difference in how you would vote? And if the election gets held up, what will you do? Are you, you know, we as Americans did not rise up when Gore, there it is, former Vice President Gore, Al Gore, when the election was denied him, we didn't rise up at all. We just sat there stunned. So I'm asking you to call in 503-231-8187. Talk about this issue that COVID-19 has raised, the issue of racism throughout our society, systemic racism, and how it harms people, literally taking their lives in much higher proportion right now due to factors that underlying racism in our communities. So when it comes to November, if they try to stop the election, what will you do? Would you allow Trump to stay in office going forward beyond November? What if your Democratic Party tells you to go along with it, like they did with the Gore decision from the Supreme Court? As far as I can tell, I can still see no legitimate reason for the Supreme Court having decided that election, that that was a complete step outside of our separation of powers. What would happen this year? What would you do? I really am very curious to hear. I think we're in a really strange and dangerous situation when we have two choices, neither of which is very good. And I'm interested to hear how you're going to handle that. And then I'm also interested to hear your ideas going forward about how you're going to handle the systemic racism that we know exists here in our own city and in our own country, and try to make a difference going forward. I can think of one idea right now, which is that we make sure that information about things like COVID-19 gets to all parts of the community. We have a public health system. How about we restore a public health system? We don't have that anymore. We used to have county clinics where people would go. Those would be great places and were great places to get information out to people. Now it's a bunch of different clinics with a bunch of different doctors. So how would you in your life begin right now to try turning the situation around in this country, fighting the racism, undoing the racism within ourselves, but also within our society? We can't wait till we're perfect people to take action. We have to take action while we're still imperfect.
We do have a caller on the line right now.
Okay, great. Who is that that's on the line?
Yeah, my name is Thomas.
Say it again. I'm not hearing that well.
Okay, yeah, I'm not hearing well either. But my name is Thomas.
Hi, Thomas.
Yeah, listen, you just said, well, what are you going to do? What are you going to do? I keep hearing that, and I just hear a lot of people are still stuck in, thinking they can only participate in the electoral system. And that I don't think that's the only thing people can do. There's a lot of things people can do in terms of activism and things like this. And one of the most positive things that I've seen lately is there's a woman named Jane McAlevey, and she's a union organizer. And as you just described, what if they not have the election and all that sort of thing? Well, if you remember those school teachers, I think it was in Virginia or someplace like that, they had a strike that spread to five other states, I think, and they did it. It was a wildcat strike. The union, the leaders, said, they can't do it. You can't do this. It's against the law. Those teachers just said, the heck with you. They did it anyway, and they got what they wanted. And my point is that I think we're getting to that point where we're given so few choices. It's not even a choice between Biden and Trump. I mean, I know, I'm not a Trump supporter. I do not like the guy, but I don't like Biden either. And when you hear people talk openly about what Biden has done and what he stands for, it's not even a choice. It's one party, one corporate party, and that's it. But people is where the power is. It says right there in the Constitution, is it? We, the people, that's where the power is, and there's a lot of power in strikes. And what she said was that in the last 40 years, there have been more strikes in 2018 than in the past 40 years. People are becoming activated. It's getting bad, right, Linda? And I think the people have to rise up. The people have to rise up.
Yeah, those teachers' unions going out, and the teachers, I have a teacher, actually I can see her front door from my house right now. I'm sitting in my dining room. She's a part of our fourplex. Her red T-shirt, and I saw her in a red T-shirt and congratulated her. And now our teachers are struggling with trying to learn how to and being able to deliver online teaching to people. But you're right, their strike raised this up. And people can do things individually. I wonder if you remember hearing about the women in Oakland who sat in a house. And these were African-American women, I believe, who sat in a house and demanded homes for moms. They did have a victory and were able to stay in some of the homes and get back into them. So I think you're right. The victories are probably going to come from the grassroots, right?
And there's a three-part thing: the nurses and the schools, the nurses and the teachers, and what she called logistics, the truck drivers, people moving things around. But the schools and the nurses are populated, those professions are populated mostly by women, and they are totally, thoroughly embedded in our culture. There are schools everywhere. There are nurses and hospitals everywhere in every community. When you look at that infrastructure for resisting and for bringing points across, that's what happens. That's why the teachers are so powerful. And in my opinion, these people in power, the people with the money, the corporations, Donald Trump and all of his henchmen there, they are afraid of the people getting organized. And to me, that's what we have to do. The people have to come together in unity and rise up. And you can see a bunch of, peaceful women just, saying what they want, they get it. I mean, it's to me, it's amazing.
Well, now, can you tell me the name, Thomas, can you tell me the name of the woman that you were mentioning, Jane, how did you say her last name?
Yes, I think it's Jane McAlevey. I think it's either M-C or M-A-C-A-L-E-V-E-Y. And she's been around for a while, but there are others, but she gives some great talks on YouTube and explains the tactics and the strategies of implementing unions, even in places where the people don't want it, and how they do that, and who they talk to. It's amazing, and how much it works. And one other book I might mention, this is going out to the extremes, but it has worked in the world, too. It's called From Dictatorship to Democracy by Gene Sharp. It's a little book, and believe it or not, it has 198 ways, 198 ways how to resist and how to, you know, bring the people together, and a lot of good stuff about strategies and tactics. It's a small book. It's been banned in certain countries because of the effect that it's had, especially in that Arab Spring and things like that, you know. So,
all right. Well,
anyway,
great.
That's it.
Thank
I'll let
you.
Somebody else talk.
Well, thank you so much, Thomas. I appreciate you coming on and bringing up those points. I think they're really important. I think that grassroots efforts are really always in the end where it has to come from. But we're often so heavily impacted by electoral politics that we find that we have to at least pay attention enough to make the decision. I often don't vote in the national elections, only vote in the local and regional elections that I think can make a difference in the state and local. But I think perhaps there are times when you have to put that aside. And someone was on yesterday and said, I think it's true that we have to not treat voting like it's a spiritual thing, and that if we don't, you know, it's a political thing. We have to use it politically. So voting for who you think will make the biggest difference can make a difference.
Would you have another caller on the line?
Okay, who have we got?
Caller, you're on the line.
My name's Norm. Thank you for taking my phone call. I like your show, Ms. Osterman.
Could you say your name one more time for me? I'm not hearing people as well as I would like.
What's Norm. Your name?
Norman?
Yeah, okay. Norman. You can call me Norman.
Okay.
You know, you're asking what a person can do. You know, I like to think of myself as a creative kind of person, so I have sidewalk chalk.
Okay.
And I can write
whatever
I feel on the sidewalk. And it's cathartic, really. It is. It feels good, you know.
You get the eye, hand, and mind all going at the same time. They're really getting to express yourself and know that other people will see it. I mean, people are doing it on my streets and stuff about you know, take care of yourself, you know, positive messages like that.
Wear your bleeping mask.
Yeah. Mask up.
Thank you for your show. I appreciate it.
Oh, well, you're welcome, and thank you for calling in, Norman. Yeah, so I think that there's many different ways that we can do this. One of the things that you said, strikes, and people were talking about strikes. Well, Thomas brought up strikes. Well, there's lots of ways that people are protesting right now, and they're protesting in different places. Cars are really big, protesting around different buildings, prisons. I've seen that. And then I've also seen one I really liked was where people brought body bags to Trump Tower, and they brought, like, I don't know how many, 6 or 7 body bags, and laid them all out in front of the Trump Tower, and then stood social distancing apart with big signs, you know, saying, you know, because I do believe I'll hold the president responsible for death, the lack of testing. You know, he individually has made a difference, and individually he's added to the death toll in this country by his horrible, slow response and refusal to take care of the people of this country in any kind of organized way. I suspect behind the scenes it's all been about business, too, you know, making sure that who's going to get contracts for what are people that he wants them to. I believe that I've heard that something like 8 out of 10 of the companies that are making the serology tests, the antibody tests, they're failing. The tests are no good. And millions of dollars are going to them while we're still struggling for, what did we get, $1,200 a piece, some of us? So we still live in this class-driven, race-driven society and known as end-stage capitalism.
We have another caller on the line.
Okay, great. Hello, good morning.
Pertinent to what your previous caller said about the number of protests and demonstrations that have been going on before this crisis, which they've all come to an abrupt end because of it. There are some people making a link that are seeing a link to that with that crisis and the great number of demonstrations that were going on around the world, that it's almost looks too convenient for them that this happened just now, when there's so many crises, there's so many demonstrations coming up, and now they all have to end. So I don't know that there really is a causal link there, but it's something to think about.
Well, yeah, I don't know if there's a causal link either, but I think there is what we've come to call disaster capitalism, and the immediate seizing of every opportunity to make more profit and to limit our ability to stop them from making profit. So,
shut down dissent.
Yeah, all over the world. Yeah, control of the population. And I know I have many friends who have said to me, straight out, don't you think maybe somebody did this? Don't you think, isn't this convenient to control people? And then
the term one is starting to hear is the plandemic.
Plandemic, oh, that's an interesting term.
I'll just leave it there, and if somebody else wants to comment on that, they can do that, okay?
Okay, great. Well, thank you for calling in. I really appreciate it. This is Linda Olson Osterlin for Thursday Morning Talk Radio on KBOO Portland Community Radio. You can call in right now at 503-231-8187. We're talking about Stephen Miller, the architect of the immigration policy, the head official racist of the Trump administration, and how 900 emails of his clearly exposed his links to extreme right-wing white supremacist organizations.
We do have another caller on the line.
Outlets. Okay. Good morning. Have I got you there?
Hello?
Hello. Yeah, hi. What's your name?
Who is this? Am I on?
Yes, you're on
yes,
there.
You are.
Oh, this is Barry?
Oh, hi, Barry. This is Linda.
Linda, hi. Yeah, something I've been really concerned about for a long time, and I even picked up a book about the Democratic Party. I don't feel that we should be feeling forced to vote for someone or anything like that, like the caller a couple callers ago spoke. You know, we should ignore politics and vote for the people that we feel are right, which would be Senator Bernie Sanders. We could still write him in.
Yes, people can do that, and I believe he's on the ballot in a lot of states still anyway, on the primary ballots anyway. So, yes, people can write in Bernie Sanders. And to be honest with you, Barry, at least a couple times I wrote in my best friend, Gloria Harris. She was some people maybe remember that in 2000 she ran for city council. She was one of the first African-American women to ever run for city council here in Portland, and she got 20% of the vote. And in her honor, she died in 2014, but in her honor, when I couldn't stand the presidential candidates, I would vote for her. So, yes, I agree with you. You can vote for who you believe.
Yeah, so it still is possible to get Senator Sanders in there, I feel. I haven't given up at all.
Well, good for you, Barry. And I think that's important for people to keep, you know, to push forward what they believe. And I appreciate you calling in and saying that. So thank you.
Yes, and okay, and
I'll let you go now, Barry. Thank you, though. Okay. Anyone else on the line there, Tammy?
Not right now. We are waiting for those phone calls.
And I realized I hadn't really introduced you. This is Tammy, our public affairs director here at KBOO, and she's being our board op bravely, you know, putting on the mask and the gloves and all the stuff. Well, I don't know you're wearing a mask while you're on the radio there, Tammy, but to go into our station to help us so we can get the, you know, so that we can get all of this out on air to you. And I really appreciate her being there. So that's the voice you've been hearing this week. The staff have been taking different turns being the person in the station getting us out to you. It's an interesting time, and I think that we'll all find that we've all changed. What I'm hoping, and not, I guess, hope isn't the right word, but what I've been talking about today is, you know, that we have this straight out white supremacist hates foreigners and people of color architect Stephen Miller in with Trump, and he's the longest one there with Trump. He's at least been there since Trump took office. He actually wrote Trump's inaugural speech. And so we have that, and then we have this other choice, Biden, but we know that we've had long-standing racial inequity in the society, and neither one of those votes is going to make sure there's a change. So how are we going to make sure there's a change?
We do have a caller on the line.
Okay, great. Let's get you on the line. Hi.
Hi, there. This is Linda.
Hi, Linda.
Hi, another Linda. I just wanted to say that I am intending to vote for Bernie Sanders in the primary. I think it's important that we still keep saying we want something else. So that's.
I hear you about that. Just the statement that we're not happy with this, and we're not feeling pushed.
Yeah, I'm so tired of the DNC, and there's no real way to deal with them except to say, no, come on, we don't want that person, we want this guy. Now, I realize Bernie has some limitations, and he has some detractors for sure, but by golly, he's an honest man, and that's pretty hard to come by, it seems. So anyway, I do, though,
in terms of our other topic, though, Linda, in terms of our topic about race and society, it is interesting that there was a full media press to do this, but still it's interesting that Biden got higher percentages of African Americans in southern states to vote for him. And I think that's in part because the Democratic Party has been, of the two parties, the one that likes to say it's against racism and but the policies of mass incarceration, the war on poverty, all of those came in under Democratic presidents, under Clinton. And those, you know, so we know that that's not a real choice. And to say one criticism of Bernie, I don't believe Bernie reached out enough between 2016 and now. He somehow he did not get the message, and maybe he has underlined, maybe he doesn't has underlying racist ideology of his own, and I don't mean to say that in the harsh way.
No,
we all have racist thoughts,
yes, we all have it in us.
He didn't reach out to the black community. He didn't spend that 2 years saying, what did I miss? I need to learn from you. Why don't you want to vote for me? I mean, he should have.
Yes,
so
gone
he,
from there.
He lost himself some stuff, And that's what I'm saying is we need to not go back to. There's so many people who want to go back to normal, but let's look at what normal has been.
Right.
And let's acknowledge that for people of color, it has not been positive.
Yes, I understand perfectly. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you so much for calling in, Linda. I really appreciate hearing from you.
Bye.
We do have one more caller, if you have time for one more.
Okay, let's give it a quick one. Yeah. Hello.
Hello. Hi, my name is Franny.
Hi, Franny.
I'm a longtime KBOO supporter. Love your show. I don't have a question. I just have a quick thing. I just feel so disgusted by the DNC, which is totally broken. I really don't want to vote for Biden because of, you know, I think he's steeped in racism and obviously sexism. And like this, he's the best that the DNC can do. I mean, I would really rather vote for my neighbor's dog, honestly, and think my dog is more qualified. I don't think Joe Biden is equipped to run the country, you know, mentally either. I mean, there's been some like evidence that he is actually suffering from dementia, you know.
Yeah,
and I'm just so disgusted with the DNC. Like I said, you know, I just feel like they've they'd almost rather I feel like they'd rather see Trump win than Bernie, and that's really gross. So
I hear you about that. Well, thank you for calling in. I appreciate it.
Take care.
I'd ask you more, but we're really out of time. So thank you. All right. Well, thank you, Tammy, our engineer, our public affairs director, and thank you, the audience, for calling in and letting us hear from you. I really appreciate it. I didn't know many of you, and it was really good to hear from you. So thank you for doing that. I want to tell you right now that we're in the springtime, and this is when we would normally be having our fundraising. We would have our spring membership drive, which is, by the way, I miss it. It's a lot of fun. It's when, as a volunteer, you get to see all the other volunteers. Now we just come from our voices. But I wanted to tell you that we still need your support. Ask you to donate if you can. If you go to our webpage, kbo.fm/give, you can give right there. If you open your phone app, it tells you how to give right there. We still need your dollars. And a wonderful member of you out there in the audience has said they will match up to $20,000 that's given in during the springtime. So please, if you can, not if it's too difficult for you, but if you're one of those who can, make a donation to KBOO today. And thank you for listening. We'll be right back.